You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Second hour now upon us as we continue our coverage. The entire show tonight dedicated to Ferguson, the ins and outs, and what a great way to start it off by having a media insider give us the inside scoop on what happens behind the scenes as the establishment media prepares a treatment on a story such as this. As I said, I watched with no surprise on Monday night the typical black response to the grand jury decision. And as we talked about with Sean Bergen, even Fox News reported that the streets of Ferguson had the atmosphere of a carnival. This was their own words, I believe, the reporter that he mentioned. The black mob gleefully laughed and had a great time while burning down the city and looting businesses. I mean, they weren't there to protest the death of someone that they believed was shot for no good reason. They were just there to behave like animals, and they did. The one good thing, though, about this whole ordeal is that all of America once again gets to see that diversity and multiculturalism are utterly incompatible with civilized society. I mean, you cannot have a first world nation with a third world population. The only solution is a peaceful separation. I really believe that. Why not have a peaceful separation of blacks and whites? Because as far as the blacks are concerned, we are the people that have held them back. We are the people that are the reason that they are how they are. We are the people that just go around, you know, our cops just shooting them for no good reason. Why wouldn't they want to separate from us and have their own society? And without them, we could get away from the criminality and the hatred, and we could just do our own thing. I mean, wouldn't that be a solution? But of course, see, they don't want to really separate. No. They do not want to separate. They want the benefits of a first world lifestyle without having to contribute to it. And, you know, they will complain about the treatment and the life that they have in America, even though it is vastly superior to the life of any black in any country in Africa. Because they know the more they complain, the more they're going to get in terms of subsidies and goodies and this, that, and the other. But, you know, it was a war zone in Ferguson. Scores of police officers, a story reads, armed with riot gear, dispersed a crowd of about 300 with a volley of tear gas, pepper spray, and bean bags, but not before looters plundered a Walgreens store, Family Dollar store, burned down an AutoZone outlet. Other protesters torched a Little Caesars pizza restaurant and a local beauty shop. Among the more than 20 buildings set ablaze, two police cars were burned. Still, though, Ferguson resident Malik Rahsaan, who is a community organizer, so we know that he's black, with Hands Up United, he said that the carnage was nothing compared to the sight of Brown's body lying in the street. They have insurance. They can rebuild, said Rahsaan. Complete lack of remorse for the violation of the social contract, burning down a city, committing crimes, beating people, murdering people. It's time to go our own way. I've got, you know, listen, thepoliticalcesspool.org has just been on fire this week with not just pictures, but videos as well of the carnage in Ferguson. I got a picture here, just the one I'm looking at right now, of blacks toppling over a police car. It's just time to separate. I'm not the only one that believes that. Kevin McDonald, well, we'll get to Kevin McDonald's story about this in a moment. I want to toss it over to Eddie. We've got Sam Dixon coming up in just a couple of minutes. But Kevin McDonald wrote an article entitled that Ferguson will speed up the racialization of American politics. I'm going to read that. Basically, what Kevin McDonald has done in about six paragraphs is take everything we could possibly say in the 3 hours that we're live on the radio tonight, condense it down into six paragraphs perfectly, and that's what you get in Kevin McDonald's piece. It just hits the nail on the head with regard to Ferguson, and he doesn't mince words, and he doesn't use one word too many. Six paragraphs, he covers it all, and we're going to read it word for word rather than have him on tonight, and that's coming up in just a minute. But, Eddie, again, your take on this, the whole situation.
Well, I would just like to chime in, James, on something you said a minute ago. Why would the blacks not want to separate if, you know, if we're so evil and so horrible to them? Well, hey, here's a little Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi. We're in the tri-state area of the South here, folks. James and I, we call this kind of like Southern porch talk. I don't know if you ever fed a stray dog. And when I was a kid in Arkansas, the Arkansas Delta, my grandfather used to get onto me for feeding these old stray dogs that come to the house. They would chase his chickens or kill his chickens. They weren't worth a flip. But you know what? You feed a stray dog, and you can't get rid of them, people. We got all these blacks here that have been on, you know, subsidy programs, government welfare programs for at least 2 to 3 generations. And there is no way in this God's earth that they're ever going to leave their government subsidy program. I mean, they've got it made. There's no way they're going to leave this white society. That's just, you know, plain old porch talk, just plain common observation. I mean, they would be stupid. They're stupid, but they're not that stupid. They're not so stupid as to give up the free ride they've got. They get free education, free, you know, housing subsidies, free hospital care. I mean, my gosh, even the Mexicans coming into this country are getting that. The Mexicans coming in, they're getting on instantly. They're getting on Social Security and that we've paid in for 30, 40, 50 years that we can't get. But, I mean, why would they leave? Well, they would be insane.
That's right. I mean, they know that this isn't a so-called racist country. They know that whites, if anything, have bent over backwards. It just goes to show that what it does go to show, Eddie, is that you cannot placate these people. And I'm not, again, we always hesitate to paint with a broad brush. But for every one Jesse Lee Peterson, for every one Azola Foster, it appears as though you have 10,000 people like we saw on the streets of Ferguson in the black community. And it's just a shame for the ones who do try to live as law-abiding citizens and try to be a part of the fabric of America. And my heart goes out to these blacks that have absolutely no representation with regards to their leadership. I mean, to a man, if you are getting on the establishment press as a so-called black leader, you are aiding and abetting this lawlessness and this violation of everything that's decent. But no, I mean, the illegal aliens, you know, that's funny because a lot has happened in a week in this country. Think of what has happened in the last 10 days in this country. We've had amnesty and we've had the riots in Ferguson. And as America becomes more and more so-called multicultural, things like this will happen with more and more frequency. And I'll tell you what, you know, those blacks wanted a lynch mob, just like they have in Haiti. You want to see what happens in America? Look to Haiti. When they overthrew the French rule, and they overthrew it by murdering them, when they murdered and hung and beheaded all of the French leaders in colonial Haiti, and took over, what does Haiti look like now? What will America look like when whites become a minority?
You brought an excellent point, James. You know, you mentioned Jesse Lee Peterson. I don't know how many people out there are aware of Jesse Lee Peterson is a black, and I'll quote him. He says he's not just black. He's black as the ace of spades. That's Jesse Lee Peterson talking about himself.
And he on CNN with him. He and I were on the same side of a debate on CNN, and I have a lot of respect for the man.
Well, he said, and this is Jesse Lee. I quote Jesse Lee. He says the vast majority, not all, but most blacks, including most black ministers, are race haters. They hate white people with a purple passion.
Right. I mean, these so-called churches, we give a lot of we volley some flack towards white churches for their liberalism. Black churches are nothing but anti-white political action committees.
We gotta hit Haiti when we come back. We gotta come in on that.
We got Sam Dixon coming back, but we'll get Haiti too.
Okay.
All right. Stay tuned.
This is big!
Not just big, it's the Freeze Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale. This month, save 30 to 45% off on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy. Factory fresh stock just arrived, so now's the time to stock up with the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45% off. But hurry, supplies are limited to only the stock we have on hand. Call 866-404-3666. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com. Hurry, the Giant Factory authorized Mountain House sale is going on now, only from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211 or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Well, it's been a great show, and it continues now as we offer comprehensive coverage of every angle of the situation in Ferguson. At least we will by the time the show is over tonight. But before we introduce our next guest, I want to quickly make mention of this, or else I'll forget it. This show is going by so fast. On Monday afternoon, I had the opportunity to make a third guest appearance on a wildly popular Swedish-based talk radio program and there in Northern Europe to discuss the recent milestones of political insanity. And you can listen to that interview, which has now been posted. It focused on Obama's amnesty and, of course, the grand jury decision in Ferguson. I'm introduced at the 41-minute mark as the guy who broke their servers. My first appearance on this program, which is called The Weekly Antidote, has been downloaded now over 25,000 times. So I want you to think about that, folks. One interview, 25,000 downloads. It's their most popular show that they've had, and I've made two appearances since then, the most recent of which happened on Monday, and we're really making a lot of inroads, the political cesspool is, in Northern Europe and in Scandinavia, and I want to thank the great hosts of this program for having me on a third time. We had a great discussion about the issues on Monday. And we're going to continue a great discussion tonight with Sam Dixon, a popular orator and author and, of course, a renowned attorney. Sam, what have you observed in Ferguson that you would most like to convey to our audience? What do you think is the most important thing that we take from what is the fallout from the grand jury's decision?
Well, I think the whole thing has been very beneficial to us. Like the Trayvon Martin case, it has presented this issue to people all over America, not just in a small location. So that's been the greatest use to us. On the grand jury, it is interesting to see the extent to which the liberal media will go to justify these mobs. Years ago, when Leo Frank was convicted of the rape and murder of Mary Fagan in Atlanta, one of the issues on appeal, was a fabricated claim that the jury was intimidated by mobs. This appears in many books on the subject of the Frank trial. There is no mention of it in any news report from any newsman who covered the trial. It was presented by affidavit later on, so it really didn't happen, but liberals are greatly concerned about the role of the alleged mobs and intimidating the jury. And what you had here was you had public opinion, or published opinion, countenancing and encouraging and legitimating an effort to by mobs to intimidate a grand jury and to get the indictment they wanted. This was carried to such an extreme that on All Things Considered on National Public Radio, they featured a woman who attacked Barack Obama for not being sufficiently in support of the anti-cop position in Ferguson. And she complained that he had called for the rule of law. And she said the rule of law means the Holocaust, which was carried out, she said, by law, which is false, and slavery, which she said was carried out by law, and that they don't want to hear about the rule of law. And that's a remarkable statement by an extremist, far more radical than anything you've ever said. But you would never appear before a fawning interviewer on All Things Considered and have any of your ideas legitimized. Much less go on with this kind of rabble-rousing, radical call for violence and mob law and have it completely received with complete respect. And I think that the media has really shown itself so usefully in these two cases. That they're
I certainly agree with you, Sam. I mean, there, you know, any right-thinking person with the smallest grasp of common sense and critical thinking and reason will see that multiculturalism, as I said a moment ago, and diversity is incompatible with the first world civilized society. But speaking about the rule of law, and you're an expert, I guess, to ask on this because you've made quite a career out of being an attorney. What happens? Well, let me first preface the question by stating this. The facts of the case in Missouri were, with regards to the grand jury, is that it was a 12-person panel. Nine of the jurors were white, three were black, and you had to have nine people agreeing that he should be indicted for the motion to carry. What happens if they were all black, Sam? I asked that question because, you know, with current trajectory, whites will be a minority here in just a couple of more decades. Once we become a distinct minority, what happens to rule of law then?
Well, Montesquieu, the French philosopher, in his book, The Spirit of the Laws, said that there was no crueler tyranny than one in which the forms of law are maintained, but not the reality. And at best, we will have only the forms of law. We will have the kind of result that you saw in the O.J. Simpson case. It will simply be a form of law without any real substance to it. We will live the way that whites in South Africa live. That's how we will live.
Well, South Africa is a great example, Sam. We were talking about Haiti before the commercial break. I think we could have a lynch mob, you know, race-based lynch mob justice, you know, the kind that they fantasize about that didn't really ever exist in this country when whites were in control, will be the reality for whites. And they would have absolutely, we know that they would have lynched him because they said it on television. What do we want, Darren Wilson? What do we want him dead? They kept chanting this on national television. They wanted a lynching. You know, everything that they pretend occurred to them that they hate, they actually want to do. And I'm sorry. And there are some decent black people out there that would be an exception to this rule. But I have no faith whatsoever if it had been a 12-person black jury that the facts of this case would have, you know, added up to a tinker's dam. Do you, Sam?
Yes, I think you're right. And I think the problem, one of the problems would be is that the responsible ones would be intimidated by fear of going back to their community and facing the kind of people that we saw, the lowest element of the black race that we saw out in the streets in Ferguson, being glorified by the media. These are not representative of the blacks in general. I think they are the the worst. They are the troublemakers who have plenty of time on their hands, to don't have jobs to go to, who can go out night after night after night and commit these acts of violence that really hurt their own community.
Good point.
I think you would have a tremendous pressure. You know, blacks are very much healthier than white people in many respects. They whites are not as superior as whites want to think they are. In fact, in many respects, we are inferior to blacks. Blacks have a wonderful sense of community that we don't have. I think I mentioned one time in one of those other program, or maybe my talk, that I went to a post office in downtown Atlanta, and I was the only white person there waiting to mail a certified letter. And there were three attendants, all postal clerks, all of whom were African American, and there were maybe 18 or so African Americans in line to mail things or get mail. And there was such a wonderful spirit of community among these blacks as they spoke to each other in the line. They were smiling and laughing, and when it came time for them to go up to the postal clerks, the clerks would say, "You know, come over, sister. Come here, sister. What do you need?" I've never had a white person say, "Come over here, brother, what do you need?" But the same feeling of community they have means that they are under a great deal of community pressure to do what the community wants.
Well, Sam, that's a great point. We'll have to end it with that. I know you have another engagement tonight, and we were lucky to have you even for a single segment. And I want to thank you for making the time for us and answering our questions. We'll continue this discussion, I'm sure, but we appreciate it. Thank you so much, Sam Dixon.
Thank you.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on subscribe now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQonline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
I'm going to read this very quickly so we can get Eddie the Bombardier Miller back online here. He's actually in the studio with me. But Kevin McDonald. I was going to have Kevin McDonald on the show tonight, but two reasons I didn't. Number one, we've had him on quite a bit lately, and I didn't want to exploit our friendship putting him out with all these appearances. And number two, he wrote an article that I think sums up everything, and I'm going to read it now. It's entitled, "Ferguson Will Speed Up the Racialization of American Politics." Dr. Kevin McDonald, he's a PhD in evolutionary behavioral psychology, taught for many years at the California State University, Long Beach. Here's what he writes. 50 years after the Civil Rights Movement and 6 years into the quote-unquote post-racial Obama presidency, we have Ferguson. Politics in the United States and other Western countries is getting steadily more racialized as whites and non-whites gravitate to separate political parties with vastly divergent interests and attitudes. Ferguson will accelerate this process. Apart from those whites who make a living in the bastions of liberal power in the media and academic world, the great majority of whites will see this as a justified shooting in which an out-of-control, enraged, and very physically imposing black thug attacked a white police officer. That's what the evidence pointed to. And St. Louis prosecuting attorney Robert McCulloch made it clear that some of the testimony implicating Officer Wilson was wildly at odds with the facts of the case. In case you don't know, folks, there were some black witnesses, quote-unquote, that just went in there and lied, basically, is what happened. To put it charitably, these people saw what they wanted to see, and the black underclass and the black activists went all in with that narrative. Obama's statement that the anger was so-called understandable is outrageous, since the anger flies in the face of the evidence. And even if you buy the idea that what happened in the past at least makes the reaction understandable, it certainly doesn't justify an indictment, much less the shooting, burning, and looting. White America, watching the television coverage, once again had its stereotypes of the black underclass confirmed. Irrational, violent, white-hating, and prone to criminality. Implicitly, at least, there will be an uptick in race realism, Hollywood's continuing attempts to stereotype blacks as intelligent computer experts with the wisdom of Gandhi will face an increasingly uphill battle against reality. After enabling the black middle class, after all the affirmative action, after electing a black president and getting a race-obsessed attorney general, after the massive, incredibly expensive, futile efforts to improve the academic performance of black children, after all the billions in welfare programs, after all the programs aimed at lowering black criminality, there remains a very large black underclass operating completely outside the institutional structures created by Western civilization. For this group, nothing remains except anger at a system that they cannot comprehend and blaming their failures on white racism. Like the racially divergent attitudes on the O.J. Simpson double murder verdict and the Trayvon Martin Ferguson, all of these events are stored deep in the brains of white America. Ferguson will make them identify more with being white and as having interests that are radically divergent from black America. It will make them vote along with other whites. It will further polarize the racial landscape. If this were the 1980s, Kevin McDonald writes, I would have likely deplored such a reaction. But it's 2014, and the left has created so many facts on the ground via massive non-white immigration and the constant drumbeat about the evil of white America and the glories of multiculturalism that the results of Ferguson can only be positive. It will lead whites to having a greater cohesion and realization that it is suicide for whites to become a minority in America where there is so much irrational hatred against them. It will make whites more concerned about the massive non-white immigration, legal and illegal. Calls for yet more liberal programs addressing the pathology of the black underclass will fall on increasingly deaf ears. Whites will be more motivated than ever to move away from racial diversity. Whites are one step further down the road of getting to where they need to be in order to begin rolling back the disastrous policies of recent decades and begin the process of establishing white areas without the possibility of a Ferguson.
As I said, folks, in that article, Kevin McDonald covers everything in just a few paragraphs that we would have spent 3 hours trying to relay to you. That's why I wanted to read it verbatim and word for word. This article, by the way, is featured this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org, complete with illustrations, including a picture of Michael Brown with a wad full of cash in his mouth, holding a handgun at the camera, a guy behind him smoking pot. There's some sort of an alcoholic beverage. What was he, 18? So he's got some alcohol there with a mixer of Hawaiian punch. There's an AutoZone store completely ablaze that they set on fire the night of the verdict. We have some blacks going shopping here at a grocery store that they have looted and completely turned upside down. They're just stealing everything. A guy urinating in front of flames, a black guy urinating in front of flames as Ferguson burns. So let these words of Kevin McDonald, let these images leave a deep imprint in your mind. But basically, his entire thesis is that this is the reality, and it's a far cry from the reality that we see put upon us in movies and television shows and commercials, where blacks are always the saviors and the wise people, and whites are either the villains or the buffoons. This is reality, folks, and it's a shame that it is. I wish that it wasn't, but it is, and we have to deal with it, Eddie.
You know, James, before I forget, we need to, we don't have near enough time on this show to go into the motives of the news media and the motives of the government and the motives of the globalists who run, control the government and the news media and all the banks. We need to cover that, why they are doing this, why they're supporting these riots, on another show, hopefully next week if we have time. I would like to address one of my favorite people, that Sam Dixon. I always love to hear Sam Dixon. He's so eloquent. He addressed the so-called the sense of community in the black neighborhood. Well, I think that he was being overly charitable there, although I know what he's talking about, because I come from a background. Most of you people that have been following the cesspool of 3-4 years, you know how I grew up just in an absolute hellhole of South Memphis. And I learned all about this sense of community that the blacks have. I would like to more liken it to a tribe, a tribal mentality, or a pride mentality, like a lion pride, or a wolf pack, or maybe even an ape troop. You know, those lions will kill their own young. A incoming marauding male lion will kill the cubs of another lion, but they will band together to attack, you know, other animals like hyenas, their blood enemies. But I'm here to tell you, people, they would have lynched. Not only would they lynch Darren Wilson, they would be satisfied to lynch. You could throw them any white. Just, you could throw any white out there to them and let them lynch them, more than one preferably, and that would satisfy their bloodlust. I witnessed this. I had to take a different route to and from school every day when I was a kid, from the time I was like 11 years old to the time I was 16 years old. I've seen this, and it wasn't just a few bad. They were predominantly bad where I was. They were out to get me because I was white. And I would like to go back also, James, and address something we talked about earlier. Haiti, Kenya, South Africa. Listen, and here we go bashing the churches again, rightfully so. We have these people, these churches, in my church, James's church, any church you want to name, we're sending these missionaries to God-awful place all over the country, to Haiti, Kenya, South Africa. And we're, you know, any time of the day, you'll see people in these wonderful evangelical Christian churches, especially in the South, gnashing their teeth and wringing their hands, worrying about the blacks in these third world countries. Well, let me tell you what. We've talked about during the commercials here how Haiti was like a jewel in a civilization in progress before the blacks had an uprising there and killed all the white people. The white people that went in there and created these wonderful farms and plantations and they made a good life for everybody there, including the blacks. Same thing in Kenya. I addressed the people from my church that are gone over to Kenya as mercenaries, and I asked them, by the way, have you ever heard of this little thing called the Mau Mau Uprising? Has it ever occurred to you that why there's so much poverty and just the law of the jungle in places like Kenya and Haiti is because they killed all the white people that went in and made Kenya and South Africa? You know, in Zimbabwe, which was Rhodesia one time, you know, Rhodesia, when the white people went in there, the white Afrikaners, they created an absolute Garden of Eden in Rhodesia. Rhodesia was called the breadbasket of the entire continent of Africa. They exported food. They fed the Africans there, all, you know, blacks and whites. But now the entire continent is, pretty much facing starvation. Were it not from people like the United States and some Europe shipping just God only knows how many hundreds and thousands of tons of food to them, But that's the point I would like to make, and I would like that really gets under our skin here at the cesspool. We do need to go back and listen. I would like, before we go to Joe in Pennsylvania, I would like to point out, we don't have enough time, but I would like to ask the question, the audience, to think this may be a rhetorical question, but why is the government perpetrating? Why are they aiding, abetting, facilitating, encouraging these riots, standing back and letting them go? What is their purpose? What is their purpose of letting? Can you imagine when we get thousands and thousands and thousands more Mexicans in here? How bad it's going to get? I'll tell you why later when we come back if we have time.
Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back with that and more right after this.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells, but as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
We're going to get to Joe, one of our callers in Pennsylvania. We're going to get back to Eddie Miller's thoughts that he was working on before the last commercial break in just a moment. But first, I want to switch it over to Jared Taylor, who is not with us live tonight, as he normally is. But he, too, like Kevin McDonald, has written an absolutely succinct and to-the-point commentary on this matter that I would like to share with you now, and then we'll go to Joe. The title of Jared Taylor's article is Obama Says the Problem is Our Justice System, Not Violent Criminals. This is what Jared Taylor writes, the editor of American Renaissance magazine. The grand jury in Missouri has spoken. Officer Darren Wilson was justified in shooting Michael Brown, and there is no probable cause to indict. Fortunately for those non-whites and three blacks, their identities will never be known, talking about the grand jury. They made a brave decision. Prosecutor Robert McCullough made a detailed statement of the evidence presented to the grand jury and promised to make it all public, but needless to say, no one was interested in the evidence. In Ferguson, looters set fire to a whole block of businesses on West Florissant Avenue and looted and burned down other businesses. Dozens of them. They burned down vehicles at an auto dealership. Police counted more than 150 gunshots during the night, and firemen were afraid to light fires. To fight fires. The protests in Manhattan and the looting in Chicago and Oakland followed. So-called black leaders said the usual foolish things. Marsha Fudge, Democrat from Ohio and chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, said that the grand jury decision, quote, seems to underscore an unwritten rule that black lives hold no value, that you may kill black men in this country without consequences or repercussions. And I would like to depart from Jared's commentary to just ask what planet this moron lives on. All evidence be damned, she still pretends to hold this conviction. Getting back to Jared's column, Al Sharpton said the justice system is, quote, deeply flawed and very suspect. What else is new? It's far more interesting that Barack Obama felt compelled to make an unusual evening statement to the press. What he said, after all, he is the president of the United States, is actually more outrageous than the fudge nonsense about how blacks can be killed with impunity. Mr. Obama spoke for nearly 10 minutes and spent about 7 of them blaming the police. He said protesters have, quote, legitimate issues of how communities and law enforcement interact, and called anger over the refusal to indict an understandable reaction. He explained that Ferguson is the example of broader challenges that we still face as a nation. He said that he has instructed Attorney General Holder to work with cities across the country to train law enforcement so that it conducts itself in a way that is fair to everyone. This is not just an issue for Ferguson. This is an issue for America, he explained, adding that the country can look forward to tackling a much-needed criminal justice reform. America isn't everything that it could be, he said sorrowfully, but we can make progress, not just in Ferguson, but in those communities and cities around the country. In other words, his friend Al Sharpton is right. The American justice system is deeply flawed. The president didn't have one word of criticism for Michael Brown. Not once did he say that it's a bad idea to get high on drugs and commit a strong-armed robbery. Not once did he say it's a bad idea to punch a policeman. Not once did he say it's a bad idea to try to grab an officer's gun. Not once did he say it's a bad idea to head towards a policeman who has already fired shots at you. In warning, police who do these things, whatever their race, have an excellent chance of being shot. People who do these things, rather, regardless of the race, have an excellent chance of being shot. And that's exactly as it should be. The president did not pronounce the words, quote, there's never an excuse for violence. He wasn't talking about Michael Brown. He was asking angry blacks who were already throwing bottles at Ferguson towards the policeman to direct their righteous rage in constructive ways. Mr. Obama can instruct 1,000 Eric Holders to go out and hold hands with the police. He can spend the rest of his term moaning about the broader challenges we still face as a nation and tackling the much-needed criminal justice reform. But what is the precise flaw in the justice system that caused Michael Brown to die or that caused the grand jury to fail to indict? Is the criminal justice system broken, like the immigration system? Why can't Obama fix it with an executive order? Doesn't the president even believe his own baloney? The president, the problem, rather, is violent criminals, not a deeply flawed justice system. This is dazzlingly and blindingly obvious to anyone not completely addled by a college education and viewership to MSNBC. Ordinary Americans understand this, and they will flood talk radio and dominate the comments sections on news sites. And Jared Taylor is so right about this, folks. You read any article about this online, and the comment section is dominated by common sense and people like us. But you'll be able to count on the fingers of one hand the elected officials or commentators who will say anything about Ferguson that isn't feel-good foolishness or outright anti-white nastiness. The grand jury decision and its aftermath are like Tawana Brawley, the Duke lacrosse rape case, the Gina Six, Trayvon Martin, and a thousand other racial hoaxes and con games that are slowly but surely wearing out the patience of white people. Rudyard Kipling saw it coming when he said, quote, "It's not part of their blood. It came to them very late, with long arrears to make good when the Saxon began to hate." That's Jared Taylor's commentary. Read that at thepoliticalcesspool.org, as well as Kevin McDonald's column. Both have been featured on our website in the past few days. Let's now go, without further ado, to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, take it away.
Hello, James.
Hello.
And gang there over at the pool. I wonder if you could expound a little bit on past events, if you could, really fast, and I'll hang up and listen online. The dichotomy between Ferguson and the police officer who defended himself against a black criminal, and the similarity between the police officer doing what he did and Bernard Goetz defending himself against five similar black criminals in the New York City subways back in the 80s.
I've got to plead ignorant here, Joe. I was born in 1980, so I might have. All right, but Eddie remembers it, and I'm going to let Eddie tackle this so you can listen. I'm a little bit too wet behind the ears to answer that with any source of authority. Do you understand simply, I guess, that if you're white, you can't defend yourself, and that's the connection. But do you remember the story, Eddie?
I was there. Listen, I'm
thank you for the call, Joe.
I was there when Moses came down from Mount Sinai.
Thank you.
I was there when Moses came down. That's how old I am. Yes, I do remember. Hey, I remember I was around when Bernard Goetz went through that. Here's the story. Bernard Goetz was a good Jewish boy, by the way, and who had been attacked and mobbed and beaten many times until he got tired of it. So he went and purchased a handgun. And the next time he got attacked by a group of black thugs, he opened fire. And he put one of them in a wheelchair who was crippled for life. I don't remember if he killed any or not. But there was a big ballyhoo-hoo over that. I don't think that Bernard Goetz ever got any time out of that, though. Had he been a Gentile Christian boy, he probably would have. But I remember that so well. That's a very good point. Also, I would like to address a point that James talked about that our so-called president in the White House is talking about, that we need to have, you know, a new overhaul of the law. We need to go and teach the states, how to enforce law and stuff. I would like to point out to the so-called constitutional lawyer in the White House that the only area through the United States government has any rights enforcing law. And I'm reading for the Constitution again. You people know how fond I am of that document. Under section, Article 10, Section 8, it says, here's what they can do. They can provide for punishment of counterfeiting the securities and credit coin of the United States. They can also define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of natures. Those are the only two instances where the federal government can come in and be involved in any type of law enforcement whatsoever. They have no right, no business getting involved in the states anywhere. The states, the governors, we the people need to tell the president and all of his cronies to stay the hell out of our business and stay back in there to Sodom on the Potomac where he deserves. But by the way, Joe Wright, have you heard whatever happened to Bernard Goetz? I don't believe he got any time out of that, did he?
Well, he's not on there with us anymore.
Okay. I don't think he ever got any time out of that. But that's an excellent point. You know, New York City, I know we're singing to the preaching to the choir out here, singing to the singing song, second verse. But probably the only place in the United States has more tighter gun control laws than New York City would probably be Washington, D.C. I would say that's probably maybe Hartford, Massachusetts, but Washington, D.C., the tightest gun control laws in the world. And they have also the highest crime rate. James made a point earlier tonight, and rightfully so, that an armed society is a polite society. In every single case, where people are allowed to keep and bear arms, the rate of violent crime is very low. And vice versa, where you have the strictest gun control laws, you have the highest rate of violent crime. That's been proved. There's a professor, I wish I could remember his name, from Florida.
Oh, great.
Hey, he served eight. Well, Sam, on the ball as usual, our producer, supplied the answer like he's done 10,000 times before. Bernard Goetz served 8 months of a, I think Sam said a one-year sentence. He served 8 months. That's fired five shots and wounded all four men. Hey, dittos for Bernard. That's pretty good shooting, man. They hit four out of five
in a high-pressure situation.
And that was a very high-pressure situation. But
better than Officer Wilson did.
Yes, he did. Oh, I'd like to go back to Officer Wilson, too.
We will go back to him. And let me tell you something. Officer Wilson has spoken. He did a major interview with ABC News after the grand jury's decision was rendered, and he says he stands by his decision. He has no regrets. He knows he did what he was supposed to do according to his training, and he would do it again.
If he didn't, he'd be dead now.
And we're going to take a break. He's a real man.
Radio Network.